This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat, it's time to dive into something truly special. Kia ora Dunedin, and hello to everyone tuned in from the South Island, the North, or wherever these radio waves find you. Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, your weekly dive into Ukrainian culture right here in the heart of Otago. I'm your host Olya Vyazenko, originally from Kyiv and now happily settled in wonderful Dunedin. Today we are diving into Ukrainian cuisine, the hearty, historic, garlic-loving food that's kept my people strong for centuries. We will talk history, iconic dishes, why food is basically a family ritual in Ukraine, and a few funny truths along the way. Ukrainian cuisine is a living treasury of national traditions and experience, passed down for centuries through the oven, the seasons, the land, family life, scarcity and abundance. It is known for its diversity, generosity of flavor, and unexpected combinations that often appear because of practicality. You eat what grows, preserve what can be stored, and turn whatever you have into something that can feed a large family. In Ukraine, food has always been more than a quick meal. It is an art of everyday life and a kind of gastronomic harmony that carries the soul and customs of the people. Many dishes come with not only a recipe, but a story. They are tied to the calendar, rituals, regions, and even the mood of the person cooking. Ukrainian cuisine is fascinating because it is both simple at its core, grains, vegetables, pork, dairy, and complex in its execution. It takes time, it simmers, it rests, it ferments, it is built from many ingredients and techniques. First, a quick history overview. The roots of Ukrainian food go back thousands of years to those endless black soil plains that have earned Ukraine the title breadbasket of Europe. Ukrainian agriculture and with it the foundations of our cuisine dates back to around 5000-5050 before Christ, when our ancestors were already farming like pros on that super fertile soil, Chornozem. A national cuisine is an inseparable part of culture. It works like a colorful mirror of history. Every era brought new products, flavors, and techniques, or on the contrary, took them away. Several key factors shaped Ukrainian cuisine. Over centuries, we have borrowed flavors from our neighbors, Poles, Tatars, Ottomans, Greeks, Turks, Hungarians, Germans, and many others, because Ukraine has long been a crossroad of empires. But we always made those influences our own, turning them into distinctly Ukrainian versions. Our lands lay at the crossroads of routes from east to west and from north to south, creating a constant exchange of products, ideas, and cooking methods. That's why so many dishes feel familiar to the world, yet have a uniquely Ukrainian twist. The pattern of influences is complex and fascinating. A favorable climate and extraordinary biodiversity made Ukrainian cuisine deeply seasonal and regionally distinct. Basic ingredients are common everywhere, but each region has its own flavor logic and signature dishes. From the hearty stews of the central steppes to the mountain-inspired tastes of the Carpathians. And Ukrainian cuisine was built around the oven, peach in Ukrainian. That's why traditional dishes are often boiled, stewed, baked, or slow-cooked rather than quickly fried. The peach could hold several pots and clay vessels at once, allowing for a variety without endless standing at the stove. It was more than just a cooking tool, it was the heart of the home. There were even rules around the oven: no arguing, no shouting, no poisoning the atmosphere. Because food, it's not only calories, it's also the state of mind you put into it. Some believed the home spirit lived in the peach. For many centuries, bread, baked goods, and grain-based dishes formed the foundation of Ukrainian everyday food. From the oldest unleavened flatbreads made thousands of years ago to the complex baked goods that amazed travelers. In medieval Ukraine, bread was most often baked from rye flour, less often from barley or oats. Wheat bread was mainly festive, for Christmas, Easter, weddings. The dough doesn't like a bad mood, arguments or shouting. It sounds like superstition, but in practice, it's about attention and a stable, calm process, the kind of care that makes the bread rise perfectly. Bread was usually leavened with sourdough. Sources also mention starters made with hops. Add-ins varied by region. In Slobozhanshchina, they might mix in buckwheat flour, in the west, oats or maize, and in Polesia, even potatoes. When Honoré de Balzac visited Ukraine in the 1840s, he called it an earthly paradise and wrote that he had already discovered 77 different ways of making bread. A whole separate cultural layer is the names of baked goods. There are hundreds of them. Grains also meant porridges, millet, barley, oats, wheat, peas, lentils, and from the 13th, 14th centuries, buckwheat spread widely. At the turn of the 17th, 18th century, under Ottoman influence, maize appeared in the southern territories. People grew it eagerly, and around then mamaliha, a hearty corn porridge, began to be cooked. Eggplant, however, remained foreign for a long time and even provoked disapproval in parts of traditional society. It was seen as a basurman, infidel dish. It's a great example of how food can mark cultural boundaries. Potatoes entered the diet widely in the 18th, 19th centuries, especially after poor harvests and hungry years pushed people to rely on this hardy crop. Vegetable oils had been used for centuries, but from the late 19th century, industrial production of sunflower oil quickly pushed out most other plant oils, making Ukraine a world leader in this golden staple. Tomatoes became truly widespread in the first half of the 20th century, though they started appearing earlier in the 19th, transforming dishes like borscht, where tomato paste became a souring agent, replacing fermented beets in many households. Now let's talk about rituals. In Ukraine, food isn't just fuel. It's family, tradition, and sometimes a bit of magic. Take bread and salt. When guests arrive, we greet them with a lot of bread topped with salt. Bread symbolizes hospitality, warm and welcoming, and salt means lasting friendship. At weddings, the bride and groom bite into a special bread called korovai to see who will be the boss in the marriage. Whoever gets the bigger bite wins. On Christmas Eve, Svetý Večer, we serve 12 dishes, one for each apostle. No meat, just fish, vegetables, vareniki, mushrooms, uzvar, dried fruit compote, holubtsi, and more, because it's a fasting day. And of course, kutia is essential. A sweet wheat pudding with honey, poppy seeds, nuts, and raisins. One spoonful for good luck in the new year. Easter brings Pascha. A sweet yeast bread, often decorated with symbols and raisins, plus cheese pascha, a molded sweet spread made from cottage cheese, butter, eggs and sugar, sometimes called syrna pascha. We bless baskets with pascha, krashanki, dyed eggs, kovbasa, sausages, cheese and whatever fits the basket. After church, we crack eggs, say Christos Voskres, Christ is risen, and reply Воистину воскрес, truly he is risen. Then we feast like there is no tomorrow. Even at funerals, food is a ritual to honor the departed. Sharing meals brings comfort and keeps memories alive. In Ukraine, the pominki, memorial meal, after the funeral and on key days like the 9th, 4th or anniversaries, is a quiet, heartfelt gathering. It's a time for family and friends to come together, remember the person, offer support and symbolically help the soul on its journey. In Ukraine, we call this special memorial dish kolovo. It's like a sweet grain porridge, a type of kutia. It starts and ends the meal after the funeral. Everyone gets 3 spoonfuls and whatever's left goes on the windowsill or table. Old beliefs say it's for the souls of the departed who come to join us. Other traditional foods include hot borscht, served steaming because the rising steam is believed to carry the souls upwards to heaven. Pancakes, mlinci, symbolizing the sun and renewal. Kisil, a thick fruit jelly drink, uzvar, compote from dried fruits, simple meat or fish dishes, potato dishes, salads, and bread or pyryshki. People also leave a place set in for the soul, with the glass of drinks covered with the piece of bread. Ukrainian cuisine is both cohesive and deeply regional. One could say there is a shared core of ingredients and techniques. Pork, beetroot, flour, oil, fermentation, the oven, but flavors open differently everywhere. People travel across Ukraine for signature regional dishes, to Poltava for halushki, pillowy dumplings, to Korostin for deruny, crispy potato pancakes. They even have a festival of deruny and a monument of deruny. To Lviv for coffee and plyatsky, layered cakes. To Odessa for salted fish and fresh black sea cooking. And in Zakarpattia for bohrach, banash, creamy corn porridge with brinza cheese and brinza itself. While in many small towns, there is that one special dish people drive for. All right, time for the dishes themselves. We will kick off with the undisputed king, borscht. Picture rich meat broth, ruby red from beets, loaded with cabbage, tomatoes, potatoes, carrot, beans, onion and garlic. Then finished with the generous dollop of sour cream and fresh dill on top. It's even tastier the next day. There are over 70 regional recipes, and every family swears theirs has that one secret ingredient that makes it unbeatable. Some guard their version like a state secret. You will hear it everywhere, my borscht is the best. And honestly, because I am Ukrainian, I will assure you, my borscht is of course the best. I shared the recipe of my borscht in episode 2 of Borscht Club. You can find it along with other episodes on the Otago Access Radio website or stream the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just search for Borscht Club. In 2022, UNESCO added the culture of Ukrainian borscht cooking to its list of intangible cultural heritage. Borscht comes in thousands of styles – red, green, mushroom, cold, and traditionally it's paired not with plain bread, but with the garlicky pampushki – fluffy little doughnuts. Borscht festivals pop up all over, and it's basically Ukraine's gastronomic DNA. Next, vareniki – our boiled dumplings. They are incredibly versatile, savory or sweet, thick and fluffy or thin and delicate, filled with mashed potatoes, cottage cheese, mushrooms, berries, beans, brinza cheese and many more. Boil them and eat with fried onion, not sweet ones though. And of course sour cream for both, sweet and not. It's basically our version of tomato sauce. We put it on almost everything. Legend says that vareniki are shaped like half moons to bring a good luck. We devour them at family gatherings, and there is always that one uncle who bets he can polish off 20 in one go. It's really hard, believe me. They're quite big. Pork has long been the heart of traditional Ukrainian cooking for very practical reasons. Oxen were needed for work in the fields. Beef often got sold for cash, and pork was easier to raise and preserve at home. There is even a theory that pig farming felt safer in some areas due to cultural restrictions among neighbors. Ukrainians didn't just eat pork, they turned it into an art form. Skinning the pig, salting the fat fresh, often while it's still soft and almost moving from freshness. Making blood sausage, crackling sausages preserved in rendered fat, and of course salo, cured pork fat, salted with garlic spices and in some regions smoked in attics for the extra smoky kick. And salo is a full-on cultural icon. It is very healthy and delicious. It's a pure energy, surviving harsh winters, long-lasting preservation. We have also festivals, a whole museum of salo in Lviv, even chocolate-covered salo. Classic Ukrainian joke, what's a Ukrainian favorite vegetable? Salo with bread. Then there is golubtsi, cabbage rolls stuffed with rice, meat and herbs, simmered in tomato sauce and topped with sour cream. Next up, syrniki, fried cottage cheese pancakes. Golden, fluffy and served with jam or, you guessed it, sour cream. Deruny. Crispy potato pancakes, grated spuds fried until golden and crunchy, then drowned in surprise sour cream. Also, Ukrainians ferment everything. Sauerkraut, pickles, even bread kvass, a lightly fizzy drink made from rye bread. It's our probiotic obsession long before it became trendy worldwide. Vegetables were always a crucial part of Ukrainian cuisine. All documents mention cabbage, beetroot, parsnip, and turnip going back centuries. Later, onions became widely used around the 13th century, and we adopted cucumber-growing traditions from the Byzantine Greeks. Up to the 19th century, the oldest and most common ways to preserve veggies were salting and fermenting. Fermented cabbage and beetroot, salted cucumbers, watermelons, mushrooms, drying and curing were popular too, including fruits sometimes marinated in honey. A great example is Nizhyn cucumbers, a story of trade, migration, and expert salting techniques. Over time, this tradition grew so strong that Nizhyn cucumbers were exported far beyond Ukraine, reaching industrial scale. By the way, you can actually find Nizhyn products in some shops or online here in Dunedin. They bring that authentic Ukrainian tang. Fish dishes aren't super dominant in the grand canonical Ukrainian tradition, but we ate and still eat plenty. Crucian carp baked or fried in sour cream. Stuffed pike, carp, pike perch. There is a whole lay around caviar in the 19th century for preserving and eating. In the Black Sea areas, oysters and mussels popped up, and some river regions had their own mussels, shkalke. And speaking of sharing, Ukrainians are incredibly hospitable. This likely comes from old times when any traveler could knock on a door, get fed the best we had, in the hope that someone would do the same for our own family far from home. Portions are generous because sharing is caring. If your plate is empty, babusha, grandma, will refill it, no escape. It's all about warmth, community, and making sure no one leaves hungry. That intro got a little long-winded before our kitchen talk with my guest co-host Olena Grab. But hey, it's all about the food, right? Hi Olena, it's nice to have you in the studio, sorry, kitchen again.
Always.
Yeah.
You think that here pork is different?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Here we have our porks and our pigs, not pork. Mm-hmm. Our pigs are huge. They are laying in them. Like small compartments, they're not moving a lot, so they grow this fat, and you can, and I think it's a special breed also, not only the way how this pig grow, but also a special breed. They are really huge. They are extremely huge. And here they are very
sporty.
Sporty. Yeah, very fit.
Really?
They're running around, they're running with the chips and others on the fields. Yeah, they're not sitting in this small 2 meters by 2 meters compartment growing their fat.
In the little shed. Yeah, because we have pigs are normally kept in the shed.
Yes.
No one has, the pigs should not be running around.
Yes. Well, they can walk a little bit, but they cannot run, they cannot jump, they are too fat to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't see sallow here. Sallow, it's a pig fat. Yeah, I didn't see it here. This is what
I... Wow, really?
Because
I thought, isn't it? It's bacon tops, but that's different, right?
It's different.
It's a different.
And bacon is a little bit of sallow, of this fat.
Yeah.
And...
The lard,
The lard, and still meat.
Yes.
Yeah, but...
And the Ukrainian one is pure lard.
Yes.
And then we do...
10-15 centimeters.
10-15 centimeters of lard.
Lard,
yeah. You're talking, oh, it's now like sticking your tongue out and it's a very peculiar taste, because what then do you do with that lard? Like, okay, so you buy, we put it in salt, because I've never done my lard. My
grandmother we put it in salt, we cook on it, we made it with like something you can put on bread with garlic.
Yeah.
Like mice from fat.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. Yeah.
Schmalz.
Schmalz, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Schmalz is something that Germans also had. It is the only country so far that I've seen Schmalz. And I've seen there's a whole box is in a supermarket, just is sold as the cooking fat.
I think I saw this here.
And Germans also like it on the bread a little bit, like Schmalz. They would have the bread with Schmalz, and we would have that.
Yes.
With the bread with Schmalz and a little bit of this Schwarke, which would be the cracklings. But when I buy cracklings here, they are dried. And we don't have dried crackling. It's a very different type of thing. Schmalz, Schwarke. And also you have it as for the Wareniki, you know, for the traditional
Schwarke with onion.
Yes, you would have that as the... Ah, no, we're now saliving a little
Oh, you know the other thing here.
That is just so tasty.
Yes, and the other thing here, the pig here has smell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you not always can buy this unsmelly pig. So it's often...
You mean pork?
Like pork. Pork smells, yeah. Pork here smells.
Okay, I've never tried to have New Zealand salad. I've had a little bit of German salad because they do have that sort of Speck or Schmalz. So, because they also... And I was explaining also to people here, why do we have pork as the main meal? Because of the seasons. Again, this is something that dictates. Pig, you can have it anytime. Pig is very relatively very cheap to keep because it eats the, you know, everything. Whatever it is, it eats everything.
Yeah.
And then easily fattened and the meat would be cooked. So, instead of the cow, that cow is an expensive thing because of the weather, because of the winters. And you have need to have a big shed, and the cow needs, you know, a lot of work around it. But the pig is our guy. And I saw the same for the Germans, because they also had harsh winters. Anyone who has harsh winter would have pig as their best friend.
yeah, and here is different.
Mm. Here is mutton. I think
I love New Zealand mutton.
You love New Zealand mutton. Yeah.
It's more lamb than mutton.
Mm-hmm.
Mutton, I think, it's the older
sheep
uh-huh. which has this smell.
The smell. Yeah. We always there.
And lamb is the young one.
Lamb is smell. Great,
yeah. But I love mutton.
You love mutton.
I love mutton.
What do you cook from the mutton? Steak.
Everything. So here in New Zealand, I even cook borscht with lamb.
Ooh,
not with
that. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, and it's very tasty.
Ola, do not even.
We started to talk about food.
Yeah.
Every time we start to talk about something, we just continue to talk about food.
Talk about food.
Yeah. Maybe we are hungry.
But you know, the moment we start to, it makes us hungry when we talk about food. But I think it's food is something that
that connects people.
Yes, because everyone eats.
Yes,
you see.
Yes,
in everyone, any nation, doesn't matter what your political views. Everyone eats.
Yes, and everyone likes to eat delicious food.
Delicious,
not just something.
Yeah.
And Ukrainian food is
very,
very delicious. Yeah.
Ukrainian food is delicious. It's true. It's very comforting.
Yes,
very comforting food. And we're happy to connect on the basis of the food and New Zealand food. I find New Zealand ingredients are really, really good. I mean, the quality of the food is good. What maybe a little bit of missing is that a little bit of a... but I think it's because of the island sort of culture. Like, it's the same and the same, a lot of the same. And this is a little bit unusual. I was like, why is this the same? But because there's kind of like, it's very difficult to introduce something different. And so it's the same. But, you know, the more kind of now you can see a little bit of Italian food somewhere, you know, a little bit of Asian food. So some changes are coming. But wonderful ingredients. But I think, in my opinion, it would be great if New Zealand have a little bit more variety, like in cooking that, because I think there's a lot of food that is like, you know, like French fries and all of that, like unhealthy, like burgers and everything. Although for me, it's very strange. That was something that also struck me when we arrived here, is that the country is full of probably the best food in the world environmentally, you know, like and very, very tasty as well. And eating chips and, you know, sort of processed food. And for me, that was something like you were kind of walking on diamonds and, you know. So we cook, like I cook, because here it's, you know, you probably too, you know, because Ukrainians cook from scratch everything. And the ingredients here are just divine, really good. Yeah. except the salmon that we need to work on.
We need to grow pigs.
We need to
normal
grow pigs.
Normal Ukrainian pigs. Well, okay.
Thank you so much for this conversation today. And let us know if you want to try Ukrainian food. Maybe we need to open the Ukrainian restaurant here.
I would love to try your borscht with mutton, because I don't think I've ever tried. Anyway, it is yeah. I definitely became hungry after this conversation.
Okay, let's go and have some food. Have a nice day.
We're off.
See you next time. We're off to have some tasty food.
Bye.
See you in the next episode. We still have a lot to talk about. Take care. Побачимось. Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.